so. But tonight it is my great pleasure to welcome to the store the Freestone Four. And three of the Freestone Four have been here before. Indeed, indeed. So I will start with Ann Scott and her book.
They have a baby? I thought there was only three of them.
I beg your pardon? No. There's four right here in front of them, arrayed before you. I will go through the list. Women, Wisdom and Dreams, The Light of the Feminine Soul, is Ann Scott's work. She's the founder of Dream Weather Foundation and an author of this and other books. Next, we have Linda Terry, right over there, author of The 11 Intentions and founder of Vessels of Peace. I should say, the 11 Intentions, : Invoking the Sacred Feminine as a Pathway to Inner Peace. That's this one. These books, by the way, all over there, for sale afterwards. Don't hesitate. Don't be shy. After we're over, we're done. Myosho Ginny Matthews, it has spoken at the store many times before. She is a Rinzai nun and founder of Dharma Heart Women's Meditation Center. Her story is highlighted in one of the chapters in this book, The Unknown She, Eight Faces of an Emerging Consciousness by Hilary Hart, also over on the table over there. And definitely not least but last in my list here is Laura Duggan, founder of Freestone Retreat Center, publisher, author of An Inquiring Life, Weekly Contemplations, for which we also have a Spanish edition here in the store as well, for anyone who's interested in that, instead of the English version. And I'm so delighted you could join us. I don't know what else to say, but the floor is yours. Thank you.
Well, I was elected to give a little background of how the Freestone Four ended up speaking here together. As Rob pointed out, I'm a fairly frequent speaker here, and I was approached by the store saying, isn't it time for you to talk again? And I thought, well, I don't think I have anything particular to say, but I would love to bring my community, this heartfelt community of four women who've been meeting for two and a half years. What unites us, I think, is this love and passion for the contemplative life. So I wanted to be here in relationship with my community and in relationship with this greater community who's here tonight, hence the circle.
And I'm Laura, and also want to welcome you all for being here tonight and joining us. Our subject is Something from Nothing, which is how the Freestone Four began and continues to exist. And the origins were that I had met each of these women individually and found that they were all working in the realm of women and spirituality. And I thought, with my masculine mind, how odd that three people are doing the same thing. They ought to get together and just do one thing. I'm being honest. So I invited them to come together and to see what we could find out in common. And what evolved was, I guess, what we'll share with you tonight. But the result of that first coming together was that we come together each month in the same way, with no particular agenda except to see what might come out of nothing. And what's come has been quite something. Do you guys want to add anything before we start? No? So we would like to start the way we start each of our little impromptu gatherings, which is we always start with meditation. And so I'd like to invite you to just join us as we meditate for 10 minutes. And in a similar way to the way we do it in Freestone, we each come from a different spiritual tradition, so we all do our own thing, and that seems to work very well. and the meditative energy is quite strong. So whatever you're inclined to do, please do it. And if you don't have any particular practice, you can just stay with your breath. And we'll ring the gong at the end of 10 minutes and then see what evolves. Yeah.
So the words floating around in my head during that meditation was, no agenda. No agenda. What would it be like to meet everything that arose freshly, without an agenda, without expectations? And I think part of the process that we as the Freestone Four have been learning that process, letting things bubble up from that silence and emptiness in a deep place. I read a beautiful quote from Helen Luke. That the sacred life or the contemplative life is to just meet each thing that comes before you wholly and in the delight of that meeting is the sacred act. And that has been a contemplation for me.
Welcome.
Speak up.
Well, can we bring
that's okay. He's going to bring some chairs.
Well, we want you over here. Please. We can get you here.
We all tend to have soft voices, so.
Yes, tell us if we need to speak up.
So this is a great example of no agenda, right? What happens at our gatherings is somehow like the fire goes out and someone has to go up and tend it, or the tea is ready, and so we're sitting there chatting and you deal with what arises. And for me it's been amazing to not be intimidated by that. Like it's not wrong or right to, while someone else is speaking, to say I have to actually get up and make sure the fire's still going so we don't freeze. And I think it before these kinds of gatherings that we've done, I would have been so oversensitive to protocol, you know, like this is the right way to do it and you wait till someone stops. And of course there is a certain thing about courtesy which I'm not dismissing, but there's something about being responsive, as you just said, to what's happening in the moment. And in that responsiveness, it's there's a sense of ease that I've begun to realize is actually possible that hadn't been possible before.
one of the things that characterizes our time together is also lots of times like that, where one stops speaking and no one rushes in to fill the space. We might sit for quite a while before someone's called to say something again or pick up the thread that maybe we were weaving just a few minutes before. So if that happens here, that's okay. That's what happens. And we don't push to fill the space. We wait to see what the space invites us to bring forth, or it brings forth in us. Maybe that's more accurate way to look at it. Something wants to come forth, and by allowing the silence and the pause, and even if it feels awkward, or if it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't, and we could stay there forever, but to be willing to allow it and just see where it wants to take us next.
Which makes me think that if somehow in a pause something bubbles up from you, throw it into the fire, offer it. There's no rules here. So if we say something that strikes a chord or resonates with you or that you want to build on or want to take further, this is for us. And there's, you just speak, no hands.
Do you sometimes have an agenda or something that's real important to discuss with the others?
I don't think we have, from the, except today.
That's true. It's a little different this morning.
Yeah, we met this morning, and it was a little different knowing we were going to do this.
It's a very interesting experience to have trusted this over several years. We didn't really know each other very well, actually. I knew Linda and Jamie, but not deeply well in this way. Mm-hmm. And I found that there were some Thursdays or Wednesdays, we met once a month, when it was raining and I was a bit tired and I didn't really want to go. And yet I felt this deep commitment to sitting together. And it was like a little bit of a hump time for me, maybe once or twice. And then I recognized that those feelings had absolutely nothing to do with the incredible richness that's given when we come together and without agenda. And then that part of me that wanted to just stay home or didn't want to budge just slipped away. So
why do you think that happened?
Why?
Yeah.
Specifically?
Yeah, like what about coming there eventually, like what happened to you so that you'd realize you wouldn't need to do that?
I think for the most part, even though I live in a community, and there's a greater community in the United States, and I've been a greater community of people I know around the world, but really was very accustomed to working alone. And so it was a shift for me to not always fall back to that, or if you could imagine a rubber band, that would be the place that it would spring back to, and it just fell apart because I saw that there's something so much richer when we come together in this way. It's not for something, it's for nothing. and that nothing is really a deep dedication and a deep devotion to what we each love. And so that, to me, lifted me from the maybe desire for singularness.
It's really hard to hear
you. Okay.
Yeah.
I know you're soft-spoken, but
sorry,
it's very
interesting.
It
doesn't broadcast. Okay. So what I was saying was that the devotion or the dedication is what carried me, I can only speak for myself, out of that place of working more commonly alone. And then I got to see the something much bigger weaving together just by my presence of being there and everyone's presence. So that was a little bit of what happened, but I do remember that that time.
I'd like to know something about your different religious paths so that I can get an idea of how you came together and what you found from each path that intersected.
I don't think there's any intersection except our devotion to, as I said, the meditation, the contemplative life, silence. That's in all of our paths. So unlike coming together to maybe share our wisdoms from our paths, which could have been something, and I know people do that, that wasn't our intention. We just came with our own path and allowed it to just be there.
I also wondered how your particular paths, what part they played, kind of background, or has your coming together as individuals shown you something about your particular paths? Or I just find it very interesting that people from different, you mentioned a group, come together, and what there must be, you mentioned devotion and meditation and things as being in common. But there's something about that, I guess, in such a fragmented world, and the difficulty of learning the language of one path and another, how, if that still is with you in the background when you meet, or if you could say a little more about that, the place that plays.
The one thing that comes to me is that we never really accentuated the paths, but there was a fragrance of each path that shone through each one of us, and that's to me been this great delight. For instance, Ginny and a traditional Zen Buddhist path, or Laura, or with a Hindu.
Sure, Hindu.
Hindu.
Hindu, one country.
And Linda with
eclectic.
Well, no, you have
I lean to the Hindu yoga. I have a foundational Hindu yoga based path and teacher for many years, but I was teaching meditation before I came to that path, and I taught non-traditional specific was what I called it. So I have what I call a foundational path, and I also have a lot of other practices in meditation experience because I was teaching meditation at one time before I came to that path. So that's. But I think that I like
and Sufi tradition.
Sufi, yes. And I really like what you said about a fragrance, because it isn't as if. I mean, I remember times when one or more of us talked about our teachers or something going on with or something we remembered about a teaching. And we all know a little bit now about each other's teachers because of that. And it's always been interesting to me to see the common threads of some of those teachings and experiences that we can all hear. You know, if Ginny would talk about experience with her teacher, we could all go, oh, yeah. It isn't, like, foreign to us because there is some common understanding there. We understand, for example, about the need to surrender to the idea of having a teacher or the idea of devotion, which comes up a lot for us, or of the mysteries and contradictions of having a path where you have a teacher and have a teacher-student relationship. So that's one example where we touch into each of our ways and can all be inspired or informed by them. But it's never planned. It just happens if it happens.
You know, what I'm thinking I wanted to share was that one of the things I've gotten from our gathering is the sense of being heard. Because in the beginning, our non-agenda agenda would be that each of us would just have a chance to share whatever was up. And that could be with our spiritual life, with our teacher, with our work, with our family, whatever was up. And it's kind of like in the space, whoever had something that was up would talk about it. And what I discovered was that it wasn't like talking about it to get advice or therapy or rescued from our dilemmas. It was very little rescuing that seemed to go on. but it was about just the chance to not be alone with whatever I might be carrying in an environment that felt so safe and nurturing. And then out of that sharing, each time, it started to get deeper, and then little things would pop up where we actually could support something else, like an inspiration would arise. Like, I watched Anne working with her book, and I was just so impressed that she was working so studiously and devotedly to her own work that got inspired. I thought, I'll do my book. And I did, you know. Like, I don't know that I would have done that had I not been just aware of her own process of sending it out, trying to get it accepted, working with it. So in that way, because she would share her process, not asking for anything but sharing it, something in me woke up. And then I started something. And then we began to have little collaborations in that way, out of nothing.
Speaking about books, could you each tell us about the books that you wrote? A little something about them?
Sure. I've been writing contemplations that I send out by email for the past, this is the fourth year, and they're based on spiritual teachings from every tradition and also sometimes from poetry. And so I collected 2 years worth of those into one volume, and they're meant to be weekly inspirations for people to just work on their own and apply a spiritual insight to your own daily life. Like, what is it that arises in daily life that you can look at from the lens of inquiring deeper? That's what I did.
Well, when everyone was going to bring their book tonight, I realized I haven't written a book yet. Though one of the very first inspirations that came out of our coming together was a support for me to write an article, which I called The Tea Ladies, mm-hmm. about, in my tradition of the anonymous women tea ladies in ancient China who were never named, but were doing what they might call it dharma combat. But these young monks would go and study with a teacher in 10 years, and then they'd come out and stop at these tea shops for a cup of tea. And then the old lady there would ask him a question, and he couldn't answer it, and back he went to the master. So I did a little article, which I shared with this group. And I felt
wonderful.
It was so supportive because I'd never written before. And actually what came out of that was this idea that we would all contribute to a collection of, do you remember? One of those things that came out of nothing, that we would all contribute to a collection of the Freestone Four.
No, but what would the collection be?
We would all have a little article.
About what?
We haven't got there yet. We don't know that.
About where it goes.
But I think that was a seed that did blossom in other ways in the press.
Yeah, and then I formed Nicasio Press to publish the book called Inquiring Life. And then,
quite magnificently, I had written my book, at least the first version, and I was told it was an interesting book by some publishers, mm-hmm. but in this climate, is it going to sell in the way that they would like it to sell? Mm-hmm. So,
could you also tell what it's about?
Yes, I will. Uh-huh. So that's when Laura invited me to be an author of Nicasio Press, and it was just a godsend. It was so simple, and it was clearly time for this book to be out. So I had been doing my work primarily around this country. I have been listening to the dreams of women, sometimes men, but mostly women. And over the last few years, I began to collect these dreams, and they are somewhat prophetic, and they do carry a wisdom about our times that is both personal and applicable to the person who dreamed it, but also a much more universal wisdom that was becoming conscious through dreams. And so as I gathered these dreams, I had an experience in Baton Rouge a few years ago after Katrina, and it was just a few days after Katrina had hit, and I had been I was supposed to go to give a retreat, and they didn't want to cancel it, so mm-hmm. I came, and the room was full of about this many people, mostly women, and they were in varying degrees of shock. And some had lost their homes, and some had families living with them. And I felt so ill-equipped to even try to offer something to people who had been in this incredible devastation. And so it occurred to me that the one thing that I had was this collection of dreams that spoke of a deeper reality than what we see and hear. And I began to tell these dreams that echoed from a woman in Germany or a woman in the United States or a woman in England from different cultures, different religions. And from these dreams, the women understood that what was occurring to them was actually not isolated, but they were connected to a much bigger picture of women everywhere who were working to help heal life, to help heal community, their own lives, that there was a true interconnection. And so I saw the effect of these dreams, and it brought incredible hope to this room. And from then I made a decision that these dreams needed to be shared. I wasn't carrying them just for myself. So I wrote the book, bringing some of the dreams in there, and then also explaining the sacred process of listening to your dreams and working with them. So when Laura offered, the book just came together, and it really has taken off. It's been very wonderful.
Watch for it on the New York Times.
Did the book point out the fact of our everyday material existence being another dream? Address that?
The book, it's a very practical book, and it shows how our everyday life is imbued with this inner world that we can become more and more conscious of and creatively work with. And I don't know if that quite answers your question.
Well, the fact that our daily experience is a dream, as well as what happens at night, I just wondered if that were interwoven.
Yes.
Yes. That would be the same. Mm-hmm.
And my book came out of my work with women. I also have been called for several years to work with women, and founded a group because of that guidance called Vessels of Peace, which is an informal network of women's spiritual development and service network, is the best way I can describe it. And there are a number of practices that kind of evolved out of the beginning of bringing women together, one of which is called the 11 Intentions. And the work of Vessels of Peace, or the purpose of this group of women, is to really understand that there is these two common elements alive in the world, have been for several years and still are, this deep longing in humanity for peace, inner and outer, and this deep longing for an experience of the divine, that what I was shown was really that for many people, the lost experience of the feminine side of divinity and the feminine side of spirituality. And that these two things were connected, and that they really came together in the hearts of women. And so that was what I was given. I didn't go out looking for this. That's what I was given, the divine assignment, as people say. And so these 11 intentions, which the book centers around, are ways for women, at whatever stage they might be in coming to this idea of, well, what does it mean that there is a feminine aspect of spirituality or a feminine kind of divine vibration, it gives them doorways into that that are very related to the real world and to their real life. So this book is really meant to help women who are drawn to this, whether for the first time or maybe coming back to it again in a new way, to see how getting in touch with that aspect of the feminine in themselves and in their own way of being, in a way that's not how we think of it culturally, but is an inner way, an inner experience of the feminine, that how that can bring to them a deep peace, bring them in touch with the peace within them, and then the two can work together in the world. So it becomes, in a way of that idea of a vessel that we carry into the world, this awareness of these two qualities within us that we can then use to be of service in our lives. So that's basically my book.
So I think you're probably hearing a little theme going on here in that we do work a lot with women. The book, The Unknown She, tells my story, but also my mandate from my teacher was to create a women-centered Zen practice because he felt the unbalance in our structures, in our modalities, are that women need to, if they're called to, as I am, to bring the feminine or to bring a new way of being into these structures that exist. In fact, we were just talking about, you know, what did I want to offer tonight, for instance? What was it that I wanted to bring to my community? And I think it was the inspiration of this small little group coming together in a way that I had never experienced before. I in my introduction to Anne's book, I said, you know, 25 years of ladies' luncheons and women's book clubs and the mother's club, and I mean, nothing really satisfied my deep need for the feminine nurturance. The structures couldn't hold it, and I wasn't skillful enough maybe to bring that to it. And so for me, this has been such a growing experience of how do we come together in a different way and invite the feminine and invite the silence. And the in my Buddhist tradition, the womb space called sunyata, the empty space where everything comes from. And so that has been that inspiration I hope you can take to your lives. And I think, as I said, the I heard that word foundation. The thing that I think has helped us is that we are strongly grounded in this love and practice of meditation and silence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if we added up our years of practice, it's well over 100 years. And so
she's got 99. Yours is harder. Each day of your practice, it counts three times.
And that was something that could help me see a new way of being together.
I just want to, as always, take the other role, because I don't work exclusively with women, and I love that some people do. I love you guys for doing it. But I came from a very male-oriented life of being a computer consultant for the greater part of my life, and I came to California to rediscover my feminine side, and so inviting these esteemed women to the Freestone 4 was a very big leap for me to be in that energy. And at the same time, for me, feminine doesn't mean woman. Feminine means a quality that I've seen in men and women, and I've seen it missing in men and women. Yeah. And my teacher, who happens to be a woman, once made the comment, what the world needs now more than ever is the feminine energy. And what she meant was not that, you know, women necessarily, but that quality of compassion, of heart, of openness, of vulnerability, of nurturing, to me, is what feminine has been about. And so I whenever we have our conversations, I always need to put in not to forget that it's not man and woman we're talking about, but feminine energy and masculine energy. Mm-hmm. I was just reading a philosophical text this morning that called the Vijnana Bhairava. I think Stuart would like, actually. It's techniques to access the highest. And I've been reading over and over again the introduction, because in the Indian tradition, you don't mind if I go this way?
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
Anyway. In the Indian tradition, they talk about these energies called Shiva and Shakti, where Shiva is like the absolute quiet stillness. Shakti is the energy. And Shiva is considered masculine, and Shakti is considered feminine, which is a little opposite of what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. But this piece of the text I read this morning and yesterday and the day before, trying to get it, was it said that by the activities of Shakti, Shiva is known. Therefore, they are inseparable. And it's such an amazing thing to think about, that you can't separate manifestation and the void, that they are totally inseparable, and it's through the activities that you know it exists, and therefore, anyway, I don't know where that came from, but I'm not sure.
Thanks. There's a prayer that I love. Thank you, silence, for making a place where words can live. Thank you, words, for making a way for hearts to speak. Having to do with the relationship between the container and that which appears.
Yeah.
I like looking at the relationship between language and consciousness. And culturally, we usually give our attention to the person who's talking. And it takes some kind of agenda to keep words moving. So there's a certain way that language kind of traps us into the agenda part of the story. And the bigger part of the story does not involve agenda. Mm. That's nature. Mm. So it's like asking nature, what agenda do you have? Mm. Or asking. Mm. And it's when we're sleeping, when our agendas are totally gone, totally released, is when the dreams appear. And so that's when the natural creativity of the moment gets its chance to...
That's especially true of English. Hmm? Especially true of English. The English language is particularly problematic that way. Huh. I've understood something about the separation. The talking here is more pronounced in this culture. Instead of booming the whole being, which is so common in Tibetan, Navajo, there's only one word for mind, heart, example.
I find it really interesting that there's four of you, and I assume that that's a stable configuration. You're not interested in adding more people. Or, I mean, I think groups in general are very interesting. I've met with groups of 12, you know, or 13, but four, it seems really kind of interesting that there's four of you, and that seems to work. Or have you ever thought about that?
No, but you just reminded me of something someone once told me. Are there any Jungians around?
Rachel?
There's something about the completion of the feminine, isn't there, with four archetypes? What are they?
I'm just going to draw a blank right now.
But I remember hearing that in dreams when you saw four, there was a completion. So maybe that's why we've never felt the need for more or less.
It felt very complete.
And thanks you. I never thought of that.
But also because we weren't trying to do anything, why would you invite someone?
Right.
You know, I don't want you to think that we didn't kind of sometimes try, especially in the beginning. Do you remember some of our, we were like, well, why do you suppose we're brought together? We had a few of our meetings where we kind of explored that. We talked about, well, are we to create something? Don't you remember early
on? Yeah, I think we seeded the meetings with little ideas, but they never went very far.
That was what we started seeing.
Have a cup of tea.
But I would say that there's something that I'd like to convey that I've experienced that isn't just this group. I've experienced it in other places, but it's what happens when there's such an acceptance of one's situation, or there's no high, there's no low, there's no this is spiritual and that's not, there's just life. Mm-hmm. And it's full acceptance, and there's something deep inside that gets touched, and I can only describe it like a drink, like a deep draft of water that gets filled. Mm. And then allows me, not that I even go there for this, but I notice this, that it revitalizes something that can then move out. It doesn't just stay in me, it just flows through. And that's what I've seen in such a situation. And here I've also seen it elsewhere, where there's nothing but the complete acceptance of one's life and the grace to see it in a as this is what's given. Not that it has to change or has to be something else, but that the drink comes from that. And it's just something that I've noticed. I mean, I remember so clearly, I don't know if you remember, but Ginny, I don't know if it was with which parent, but listening to Ginny's sharing about whether it's, I think it might have been your father when he was dying. And you were just so having to deal with each day as it comes, and it was quite overwhelming. But I remember you describing coming to a parking lot. And Ginny actually spoke for a very long time. and there was this moment when she was describing how, whether it was Long's parking lot, I don't remember, but it was a very, you know, very gray, rainy situation. Whether it was rainy, I don't know, but it was very...
What do you want me to...
Why don't you say it? Because this is an example of something that just went in and... It just fed something, so I could be more present in my life.
It was a total surrender and acceptance.
Yes.
That just was grace. But I had just returned from New Mexico, which, as you may know, is a beautiful, beautiful place. You know, and I love New Mexico, and it's just gorgeous. And I had this little 2-day, I had to drive my son out there and turn around and come back right away because I couldn't be away from my father who was dying for too long. And I came back and I went to get a cup of coffee at Pete's or tea at Pete's, and I'm in the Long's parking lot and it's a grand opening with the flags waving, and I'm outside and I'm sitting next to this guy who's smoking a cigarette and playing heavy metal music on his guitar. And I just looked around and I said, this is so beautiful. This is as beautiful as New Mexico. I had just totally opened up. I wasn't rejecting the smoke or the heavy metal music or the Long's parking lot. I just totally opened to it, and I realized that there was that veil parted, and having had that experience left me open, more open for that veil to part again and again and again and see the beauty and perfection of this life on in Long's parking lot.
And somehow that deep valuing of that moment conveyed something so rich of the deep valuing of what was going on, which I don't even remember in my own life. But that's what I see something arise. You know, we each have the Long's parking lot in our own way, and to hold it with this richness, this valuing, this respect, is what I have so deeply appreciated about hearing lives in this way, hearing about everyday life.
And the sitting in meditation first opens that space so that what drops into it is met without opinions. Mm-hmm. As Laura said, to be heard without anyone trying to fix something or judge it or comment on it.
Isn't that the feminine mind?
Yes.
I mean, if you talk to a man, usually he wants to fix it. You're saying, no, no, I just want you to hear me.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I know some women who also want to fix it.
Oh, yes.
People that in my life a long time ago, and probably still could go there.
Yeah, there's a great... There's a great discipline, isn't there, in not having to leap in to someone else's story. And I notice it with people who leap in for me that they're happier, they feel fulfilled because they rescued me, but that it gets old. Like, I just want to be heard. And I think I'm pretty capable of resting myself, no matter how bizarre I get. Somewhere along there's still the light of consciousness that'll wake me up. But I notice that it's reflecting back to me my old tendencies of wanting to be the rescuer. And how do you start untraining that and just, you're just with somebody, huh? Mm-hmm. It's actually, maybe before we die, we actually grow up.
Well, this, Laura, reminds me of the conversation we had a couple months back about holding space. Maybe it was last month. because as I'm listening to you saying that and to what Anna said, that's what keeps coming up for me, is that what we do there is hold the space for one another. But we don't know what we're holding it for from gathering together, from month to month. But we just know that we come together in this silence and in this acceptance and in this trust in each other and in this space that has called us. And the space holds us, but we also hold the space. I'm working on this. I'm going to write about this because Laura wants me to give her something more on this.
Right, because I said I can't understand how you could hold space, because space is space. So how can you hold it?
Well, but we do somehow.
Maybe it's just being present.
It is part
of it. So we're just trying to explore what are different words for that, because holding space implies a something.
An action.
An action against you know, can you catch the wind? Can you hold space?
Yeah.
It's that spaciousness that one experiences during meditative experience. Mm-hmm. I think that she probably anchors for the whole group and those of us who meditated a long time.
But do you hold it? Do you hold it?
It's creating an atmosphere. You're not really holding anything. You're not grasping onto anything. It's creating an atmosphere for yourself.
Well, what came to me as you were speaking, this question arose, because it's a question I have, is gathering together on a piece of land. I mean, you may be in a house, but you're on a piece of land. And that what happens with the relationship to the piece of land and the gathering. And there's something about the space and the holding, I think, in that. And because I was wanting to ask Laura, you know, how is your house having these women come here to your house once a month? I mean, for me, I think I can't speak directly to it because there's no evidence other than a sense that something happens with the land when you pray there, and it creates something, and that the land actually misses it if you don't. You know, it's almost as if, I don't know. It's a question I have, and I'm wondering. That's the question to Laura about her house rose right before you were speaking of that.
What do you think? I think your space has changed in the 2 years we've been meeting in there. I feel from the first time I was with you.
Yes, and the house is a retreat center. That is the room that we sit in. Because of Ginny, I have that house. Because she said, "Of course you can get it."
Of course you can.
So I got it so that we could begin meditating there, and we were meditating there before we began gathering, and we got the house because that room held a meditative energy from the moment we stepped into it. Mm-hmm. Heaven knows why, but it's an 1860s house, and it's just this room that held energy. So for me, it was using a sacred space in a sacred way, and that as we've come, I think the space informs the gathering informs the space. It wouldn't be the same if we were sitting around the living room, I don't think. We are in a particularly sacred space. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that everything has fed that space that we do. We've changed, and therefore I think our experience in that room has changed. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers it or not.
The way I would like to respond to that is to talk about something that Anne has just moved recently. And when she found the house, it is the house they now live in, I went with her for one of her visits to it while she was going through the process of getting clear if that was the place. And I had told her, every place I have ever, over the past 15 years or so, when I began to be aware of this, every place I have ever lived, I've known it's the right place by walking into it by myself and feeling if it felt that sense of presence that was about the earth underneath it as well as the space itself. And that's when I've known it was the right space. And there was a moment that occurred in this house. And after that, there was no turning back, I think. There was a moment where we reached a spot in the house, and the silence and the presence in that silence was so palpable and so powerful. It was as if the house said, "Yes, I've been waiting for you. Finally, you're here." It was that kind of a feeling. And so I think there is, my own experience is that the space it wants to interact with us, the land, the earth, where we are wants to interact with us, and we also bring something to it. And so it is part of this whole idea of holding space, because of course the entire earth is holding space for all of us all the time. And that's kind of maybe where I think about nature, you know. I think of trees as doing that for me, flowers, you know, hold something for us. And so that's kind of what I feel like we do together.
I wanted to ask a couple of just sort of logistical type of questions, and one of them was about the space, which has been answered, but I wanted to, it sounds like you didn't know each other very well before you came together, but it sounds like your relationship has changed a lot, even in that you spend time together outside of your meditation circle somewhat.
Sort of.
Well, you were talking about at the house together, and you two were talking about the place
we do
together.
Retreats together. Yeah.
And do you meet like the same time? Is it like, do you have enough form so that you say, okay, this is this Tuesday or this Thursday is set aside every the third Thursday of the month? Is it like that?
We know it's a Thursday, and we know it's 9 o'clock. but we don't know which Thursday will work because people's schedules change.
Oh,
so we try and do it about once a month. And if someone's traveling, maybe it's 6 weeks, maybe it's not. So, no, we're not that structured. And I think one of the things that you're alluding to, which has happened, is that we now come together in different constellations for different reasons.
Right.
Anne and I work together for her book, and Linda and Anne did some
programs together.
Teleconferencing, and we've done some meditation retreats together, so we all mix and match. I just want to say that we're just towards the end of our time, and we always end with a minute of meditation. So before we do that, is there anything unsaid that's hovering in the ether? Or in the space, I should say.
I wanted to say something about space, just to throw in a different angle on that, and that is that when my daughter moved to Los Angeles, she moved into an apartment that was my worst nightmare, and with my granddaughter. And I grew up in the same town, and it was like when I was a kid, that would be like hell. And I walked into the space, and it freaked me out. It didn't feel safe or anything. She's been there for 2 years, and I come in for about 2 weeks out of each month and spend that time with her. And over the 2 years, that space has become sacred. So I just wanted to throw in that sacred space isn't always something that feels right away good to you.
Great point. Great point. Thank you.
Yeah.
To remember when I move to my next house.
Yeah. sanctify it.
So, we'll just sit for a moment and return to the source, from which it all came.
Quick announcements. I want to remind you about the books on the table over there associated with the work of our speakers tonight, and about the donation basket over on the counter near Stuart there. And we share that with our speakers to support their work, and it also goes to help support the work of the store. Thank you so much for coming tonight. We really appreciate your presence.
Yeah, we have, well, we're doing a meditation for example on March
8th. Yes, yes, yes.
How can I help you? I can take your email if you start mailing list.
Now and then, there's a mirror.
I want to do you know how to get set up?
Stuart?
Stuart?
Okay, hang on a second. I'll find a pen to write my email then.
Oh, let me do it.
Yeah.